Welcome to episode 2 of Protect the Paint. I am Brian McCormick, making his co-host debut, Mr. Patrick Burns. Pat, how are we doing today?
I'm doing good, man. How are you today?
Not too bad. Not too bad at all over here. Now that we figure this out, I know we have different locations, shooting this podcast. So that was fun spending an hour troubleshooting it, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. You know, it's a new platform, so we're going through growing pains, but we got to figure it out, and we're streaming from our respective arenas. So it's all good now.
Awesome, brother. Well, I'm excited to jump in here. Excited to have you on as well. We have to figure out some sort of a theme song when we jump on here. You texted me before the episode saying you want to sing us a song for 5 minutes. Is that true?
Yeah, I think it was, but I changed my mind. You know, I think we're we might have to find some music that's there's no, you know, lawsuits involved with stealing it. So
awesome. Well, our listeners will be disappointed this episode around, but we definitely have to get a song going forward here. But let's dive in, man. So, I mean, goes without saying here, but we have a final series finally, right? I mean, I was petrified that this was going to start 0-2. It was looking that way for a while. So just to recap game one, it is a game of runs as we always describe it. So Miami comes out jumping out of the gun on a 10-2 run. Mr. Max Strus, who shot 0-10 in game one, game two hits 4 threes in the first quarter. And then in the late first into the early second quarter, Denver, across 6 minutes, goes on a 27-6 run. And I think I texted you saying, dude, this might be over. Like, I might turn this off right now.
Yeah. Well, what did I say?
You said, no way. You had a little bit more faith on Miami. And I guess I just keep finding myself in the same position, you know, watching the Heat throughout the playoffs here. The best way that I can describe them is they're like a fireworks show, right? So growing up, you had like your parent or, you know, a brother, sister, you know, big brother, big sister, whatever you want to call it. And they would nudge you when the finale was coming up saying, oh, like this is the finale. And you focused on it. You were excited for about 5 straight minutes of fireworks. And every time I think the Heat reached their finale, they keep throwing fireworks up in the air. So when they went up against Milwaukee 2-1 in the first round, I'm like, okay, that was the finale. That was fun to watch. And then they win this series. And I'm like, okay, that was the finale. I told you I thought the Knicks would win that series in the second round. They beat the Knicks. And I told you, boys the men. Boston Celtics are boys the men. It's the end of the road for the Heat. Uh-huh. And again, they throw another finale. So it doesn't seem like they ever stop shooting fireworks in the air. And it's fun to watch. And, you know, I've been wrong 4 times so far throughout these playoffs about them. But I'm not disappointed in what I'm seeing, but I can't believe this run that they're making.
Yeah, the Heat definitely have all along have had higher expectations than anyone else have had for, you know, for them, for themselves, right? I mean, they were, I think, the lowest seed in the East, right? And they got in on the play-in game and, you know, but they were in the Eastern Conference Finals last year, right? So they have the experience. I'm not sure, like, what caused them to be down during the regular season, but to your other point, right? They it almost seems like it's part of their strategy to go on runs, right? Like it's almost like they coast for a while. They take the best that they analyze and take the best that the other team has, and then they go all out. They conserve their energy. They go all out and play aggressive defense and start chucking up threes, and then they go on these ridiculous runs. So it could be a Spoelstra thing.
I tend to agree because I saw a stat saying they have now matched the record for most wins when down by 10 in the playoffs. So, I mean, 7 wins when they're down by 10 plus.
Wow.
In the second half. Absolutely ridiculous. So they must just, you know, find comfort in being down and say, okay, let's turn it on. Right. You know, it would be nice if they turned it on for a full game, which they had before, but to find themselves down 10 as much as they have and to still win games and series, amazing so far.
Yeah, they're not afraid of being down, right? They know they're capable of these runs. They know they're capable of playing defense. I mean, that's usually a big trait of championship teams, right? is coming back from deficits consistently, not panicking. Yeah, I mean, they're showing they have the experience advantage. We'll see if Denver can respond, but yeah.
So let's get into the second quarter. I know I brought us, you know, off topic a little bit there, but 5 minutes left in the second quarter, Miami finds themselves down 15. And again, I'm thinking this could be over. I haven't really seen signs of life from Caleb Martin, from Duncan Robinson, and Jimmy Butler. As much as I love Jimmy, it seems like he's starting these finals games, you know, 3 for 10, 3 for 11. And you're not seeing that Jimmy Butler game, that Himmy Butler game, if you will. So they're down 15, 5 minutes left. And then at halftime, they're only down 6. And I found that remarkable given Denver had a 16-3 fast break advantage heading into halftime, which you brought up on our text the other day, like, is pretty rare given that Kevin Love is just amazing with those outlet passes. As soon as he catches those rebounds, I know when I was watching that Celtics series, he found Jimmy Butler for about 20, maybe 22 points off just those outlet passes alone. Yeah. So you're thinking, okay, like the Miami Heat, they definitely have life here. And then the third quarter comes, which was relatively back and forth, but Jokic went off. He has 18 points in the third quarter. The Miami Heat were trying to make him a scorer, as a lot of the analysts say, and he was leading up to that challenge. And then entering the fourth quarter, Denver's up 8. So what were your thoughts heading into that fourth quarter?
You know, just because of what I said about the Heat, like, they're, you know, they always respond. You know, I knew the game wasn't over. Denver, I think, has had the energy advantage. Yeah, the first two games, Jokic is probably the best player on the court, right? But I knew with the experience Miami has that they still had a chance, was what I was thinking. Jokic, if they're going to let him be a scorer, Jokic can put up some of the most points per game in the league, right? Or he could be a distributor. So they have to be careful about, you know, keeping him off balance. Maybe their thought is to have him play different roles in different quarters. Maybe that, you know, won't keep him in a rhythm a bit less. But yeah, it's Denver at points looks unstoppable. You know, I understood why you had that take, but in the NBA playoffs, you know, it is a lot about game management and experience, I've learned. So, well, you know, going into the fourth, I didn't know who would win, I'd say, to sum it up.
Exactly. I mean, I think it's recency bias, right? I know this was only the second game of the NBA Finals, but I mean, that's why many bettors lose their bets as well. We always project on what's happened recently. So we saw pretty much 7 quarters of the Nuggets dominating, in my opinion. I know they're only up 8 heading into that fourth quarter, but Miami, like I said, the first quarter came out swinging and the Nuggets came back and just knocked them down in that second quarter, right? So I put my son to bed around 7:30 or 8, and before the fourth quarter hits commercial break, he wakes up. So I go in. Again, Denver's up 8 at that point. I'm thinking maybe, you know, they'll ice the game, go up about 20 by the time I get out of there. I get out of the bedroom 5 minutes later, and Denver is down 15, and I had to do a double take. I'm making sure this is not a recorded previous game from like last year, right? 15, down 15. I'm like, what the hell happened? So then I rewound my TV and I see Miami ripped off a 15-2 run in the first 3 minutes. Duncan Robinson scored 10 of those 15 points. Like, what can you do with that if you're Denver? I understand Jokic was on the bench and they probably coasted a little bit. They probably didn't think Miami was going to come back and have, you know, the punch, even though Miami has shown that during these playoffs. But I was looking at the box score today and, you know, the play-by-play on ESPN. In the first 8 minutes of the fourth quarter, Miami goes on a 32-10 run.
Yeah. Just more of the same. I mean, what can you do with that if you're Boston? What can you do with that if you're the Knicks? What can you do with that if you're Milwaukee? They've been doing that the whole playoffs. They just keep shooting until they start hitting them. And then they play defense. Early on in the game, Denver's bench unit was outplaying Miami, right? So it's interesting to hear you describe them in the fourth quarter, how they came back and went on that run, right? With Jokic on the bench. So I hate to bring this up again, but it just seems like it was almost like rope-a-dope, where they, took their best shot, got them winded, and then they've waited till the fourth quarter to strike. So,
absolutely. Absolutely. So Denver nearly comes back at the end, by the way, too. They go on an 11-2 run in the final minutes. They're down three with about 45 seconds left, and they don't call a timeout. What did you think about that? I know a lot of coaches like the live ball situations. Miami might have fouled Denver if they took that timeout too, but they go with the live ball situation. Jamal Murray misses the three at the end. What were your thoughts on that?
My first thought was Miami should have fouled him, right? Immediately foul him. They didn't do that. Denver didn't call a timeout. I thought both teams failed, to be honest. And I fully thought Murray might have hit that, right? And it was going overtime. To me, Miami messed up more than Denver did by letting him get that shot. I don't think if Denver called the timeout, I don't think they would have got a better shot than he got, to be honest, right? That was a pretty good look. He's hit many shots like that before. I don't blame Denver at all for that.
Yeah, I thought it was a great look as well, too. Jamal Murray just sidesteps. He gets it over Jimmy Butler. I thought I was going in for a second there, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, we're going overtime.
Yeah.
I don't think the coach should be ridiculed for holding on to a timeout. A lot of people say, oh, he's taking one home. You know, you can't do anything with that. Like, it's a live ball situation. You know, the Bulls in 98, Phil Jackson has a live ball situation, and he lets Michael Jordan take the shot. So, you know, you trust your best players in that instance. Jamal Murray has hit many of the shots in the playoffs, not just this postseason, but previous as well, too. So I have no problem with the live ball situation there.
And Miami's so well coached, right? Off a sideline inbounds. Like, imagine the defense they're going to play on that, right? They're not going to get a better shot off an inbound pass against Miami. And maybe Denver knew that. So
that's a good point, because Miami is probably doubling Jamal Murray. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, Miami could have fouled with about 6 seconds left before Murray, you know, was starting to get into his gather. So, you know, 6 seconds, if you're guarding Murray, who knows if he would have even got a shot up at that point. So really good point there.
Yeah, they could have fouled him in the backcourt and, you know, before he got over half court.
Yeah. I mean, who knows? Aaron Gordon might have had the ball in his hands with 3 seconds left to take the shot. So he actually made a three late in the fourth. I know I'm making fun of him, but yeah, I'll stop where I'm at right there. But takeaways from the game. So I was texting you about this too. So you initially liked the Kevin Love substitution into the starting lineup. I remember you talking to me about that pregame. The Heat with Love on the court were plus 18. Like, he was only second on the Heat behind Gabe Vincent. Gabe Vincent was plus 22.
Yeah, in game one, they got out-muscled, out-rebounded, right? They look like the much smaller team. And, you know, Kevin Love, you know, he's a great rebounder. You know, he's a lot stronger than he looks. He can box out, right? He also, what he does on offense, if he's playing the center position, he causes the other team to have to defend five players on the Heat that can all hit threes pretty well, right? So to me, that's when it really seems to open up for them, where, you know, the paint is wide open for them to drive if they want to, and then there's somebody always at the three-point line waiting, right? So to me, he opens up their offense in a way that, and in addition to, you know, the outlet passes that you already mentioned, where he, you know, the team, when he's on the court, somebody knows to sprint and be ready for a full court pass for an easy bucket. But just in the half court offense, you know, compared to Bam Adebayo, spreads the court so much better.
Yeah, totally agree. Especially if Bam is on the bench too, it forces Jokic to have to go out to the 3-point line. And if he doesn't cover that, then Kevin Love's going to make some open threes too. So I thought it was a great decision by Eric Spoelstra. We'll never know what would happen if he made that substitution in game one prior. Maybe the Heat are up, you know, 2-0. We'll never know again. But
yeah, I don't again, know. I mean, so I think Denver was winning game one no matter what. They had the big rest advantage. You know, they're at home. They were amped up for that. So
yeah, no, and that's, I spoke about it on, you know, the solo podcast before, you know, we're doing this one, but like Denver at home, I mean, throughout the regular season, throughout the playoffs, like they've been playing out of their minds. This was their first home playoff loss at home. Right. So yeah, it's, I think it's awesome, not only from a viewership perspective, but from, if you're the Heat, you know, to steal this one, because now you have like a legit chance of winning this final series. At the end of the day, I don't really care who wins it. I just want to see great basketball. I'm happy that it's not 2-0, because then, you know, Denver probably wins in five, you know, maybe four at that point. But 1-1 tie, Denver has struggled on the road all season. They were 19-22 in the regular season. They're 4-3 in the postseason. Mm-hmm. What do you think going forward for this series? Do you think Denver wins the next two, or do you think they split?
Denver wins the next two? No. Yeah,
can you see Denver winning the next two in Miami?
Both games? No. No chance. Maybe one. Maybe. But the pressure is on them now, right? They're going to go into Miami. First time going to the East Coast in the playoffs, right? First time in, what, over a month now of having to deal with that travel. And in addition to that, they're going to Miami, which is known for being very hot.
You there, Pat? I think I lost you, Pat. Yo.
You got me back?
I got you back now.
All right. Sorry, man. My computer froze. I don't know what the hell.
No worries. I can edit all that out. So I'm going to restart that segment to ask you the question and then go from there.
Okay.
Sound good?
Yeah, let me check the video though first, because I feel like I'm delayed again. I feel like I got to switch it back to low quality. Nope, it's already low. So yeah, I'm good to go.
Cool. You ready, sir?
Yep, go ahead.
Let me just get this ready. All right, 3, 2, 1. So Miami winning that game is huge, not just only from a viewership perspective, but from a competitive standpoint as well, too. Like I said, if it goes down 2-0 right there, I don't see a scenario where Miami makes this a series. I think Denver is going to get one in Miami next, regardless. They most likely split. But want to get your thoughts here. With Denver struggling on the road all year long, they were 19-22 in the regular season, and they're 4-3 on the road in the postseason, compared to 8-0 at home. This was their first home playoff loss, by the way. So what do you see as far as the next two games in South Beach?
Yeah, you know, I think as big of an advantage Denver has at home, they lose that whenever they travel, right? They're used to playing in Denver. Other teams are not. When they travel, it almost reverses. And on top of that, going to Miami, all the way on the other side of the country, is going to be a test for them. You know, first time in the playoffs, they're going to the East Coast, playing an Eastern Conference team now. And Miami, weather-wise, is a lot hotter and more humid than it is in Denver this time of year. So that has an impact on players and their, not necessarily their effort or focus, but more so their endurance. And, you know, it might be minimal, but that could lead to some shots going hitting and others not, right? On top of that, the pressure is fully on Denver now, right? They have to, you know, they're on the road. They know they haven't done well on the road. Miami is, you know, as confident as they could be. It's not looking good for Denver. So we'll see.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what kind of adjustments Mike Malone makes here. It just felt like during the game, especially that fourth quarter when Duncan Robinson was in, that Denver was so worried about Robinson cutting. So you saw Gabe Vincent get a wide open three. Eventually, Jimmy Butler got a wide open three in the corner too. So it's pretty cool to see that not only are we seeing a great offense as far as movement in Denver, but get credit to Spo. Like those Miami Heat guys, they never stop moving. They're cutting. They're going to the corner. They're stopping short. They're setting a pick. They're pick and rolling. It's just everything about the Miami Heat right now from that fourth quarter is what they look like this entire postseason. And it's fun to watch, as we were saying. So I think that Denver finds a way to win at least one in Miami. I think it will be tough. I think Miami will be ready for them as well, too. Michael Porter Jr., I was shocked to see the box score. He had 5 points on 1 of 6 shooting. So he's arguably their third best player on their team. You need more than that. And you're going to laugh at this. Get ready for it. But this was a Tobias Harris performance by Michael Porter Jr. It really was.
We'll see if we can go one episode without mentioning Tobias Harris.
But, it's going to be all summer until he's traded. I'm telling you right now. I told you, like, maybe not next pod, but the pod after, I'm going to have a trade Tobias t-shirt on. And I'm going to wear it the entire summer. I'm not even going to wash it. Just going to wear it the entire summer. But yeah, so Porter, 5 points, 1 of 6 shooting. On the other end, can we talk for a second about how ridiculous Gabe Vincent has been? Not only this postseason, but especially the finals as well. So in the Eastern Conference Finals, he shot 51% from three. In the finals so far, he's shooting 56% from three, averaging 21 points per game.
Wild.
So I was asking you, you know, where do you see him going in free agency? Like, I don't know, have the exact numbers in front of me, but I can't see him making anything less than $15 million per year.
Yeah, I mean, I can't tell you exactly where he would be on the list, really, but I'll tell you one thing. He for sure is moving up in terms of priority on signing. Like, he's going to make probably $10 million more than he was before the playoffs, I would think, right? At least. So maybe he's right behind Josh Hart, you know, who's a free agent, in terms of the money that he gets. That would be the top level for him. So, we'll see.
Yeah, I'm just excited to see what happens with him. His stock is rising. I wish I bought some Gabe Vincent stock before the postseason because I never saw this coming whatsoever. I would say he's been Miami's second best player, but in the finals, at least so far, Bam Adebayo, this is probably the best Bam we've ever seen, including who Bam was in the bubble. Just every decision that he makes, he looks poised. He looks like he's waiting patiently for the open cutter. If he doesn't have it, he's dishing it out to the open three-pointer. I don't see him forcing a ton of shots, forcing a ton of decisions. I think he was 8 for 12 last game too. So, you know, high field goal percentage with that too. And he's playing pretty decently on Jokic defensive-wise. I mean, you can't do much more. Jokic has 41 last game, but Bam's holding his own too. What do you think about his play so far?
Yeah, he's stepped up. I mean, I think it's Denver strategy to make Bam hold the ball as much as they can, and he is comfortable doing that, right? He's maybe learning from watching Jokic play. Who knows? But he's, you know, as bad as looked at times of the playoffs, he looks very steady right now.
I think we had a cut in there. No worries. See your cat too. I'll edit all this out so don't worry.
Okay, cool.
Cool. Got that covered. Ready for your LeBron topic?
Let's go.
There we go.
Let's wrap it up.
All right. 3, 2, 1. So aside from the finals right now, the latest story that we're seeing is Kyrie is trying to recruit LeBron right now to the Dallas Mavericks. And it keeps cutting out, actually. It's so weird.
Yeah. Dinah, can you give me like 5 more minutes? You keep cutting in the video. Sorry. All right.
Sorry about that. They should like just make sure nothing happens like that ever. That's so weird.
Yeah, it's not a great program.
Okay. Are you ready?
Cool. Yep.
3, 2, 1. So I think it's about time that we talk about your favorite player in the NBA, Mr. LeBron James. He is currently being recruited to the Dallas Mavericks by Kyrie Irving. Upon first glance, I have no idea how this money would work. LeBron and Kyrie alone would be about $100 million or more off the bat in the salary cap. So I'm not going to say anything is impossible when it comes to making trades and fitting people under the cap, but you also have Luka Doncic, who's going to make, you know, 40, 45 million as well too. I don't see a scenario to where LeBron goes to Dallas, even if that was remotely possible.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's going to happen, but I think he'd have to take a pay cut to do it. Most likely. He would be the, you know, the Chris Bosh on the Miami team probably. And which would be ironic in a way, but I don't think he wants anything to do with Kyrie, to be honest. I think, you know, with Kyrie's antics and the way, you know, he's portrayed in the media and presents himself these days, I think LeBron is trying to distance himself as much as he can from his Kyrie legacy. So I don't see that happening.
Yeah, I mean, it's just not realistic to me because Bronny James just committed to USC, you know, this past spring or wherever it was, right? I can't see LeBron moving from LA when Bronny's going to be there. He wants to play with Bronny in a year as well, too, when Bronny can come into the league. So at this point in his career, if he was like 26, 27, you know, maybe I could see that scenario. But, you know, he's 38 years old. I can't see him jumping to Dallas for potentially 1 year, right, when everything is going off for him in LA right now. And if I'm LA, I have no idea why I would help Dallas acquire LeBron James. It's not like they have, you know, Jalen Brunson that they can offer, a Tyrese Maxey, you know, a young guard, you know, that can really come in there and kind of take over the franchise. So again, I don't think that's going to be a possible scenario. I think Kyrie is just shooting a shot and hey, I don't blame him, but he's also going to be an interesting player to watch over the summer because he can't really just go anywhere, right? He's going to have that huge cap number. If he wants to go to LA, which he said that he doesn't really care about going to LA at this point, like why would Dallas help him out in that scenario? Kyrie would need a trade in order to fit under the cap there. And I'm really not sure who else would really want him for 3, 4, or 5 years as well.
Yeah, no, I don't see it happening. Yeah. I mean, Kyrie is going to have a tough time the rest of his career to get back to the championship level. So I don't think he fits with Luka. They essentially have two point guards. And
Yeah, that just seems like a scenario where there's only one ball. We've heard that all before, the big three in Miami, the Clippers with, you know, Kawhi and Paul George. But I could see that analogy be taken to the highest level if Dallas acquires LeBron James and they have him, Kyrie, and Luka all sharing the rock. I don't see Luka cutting every other play as well, too,
no.
In order to get that ball.
No.
But appreciate you hopping on, Pat. I think that's all that we have for today right now. But want to get your thoughts here. So what is your prediction for the rest of the finals? If you had to give a series count, what are you leaning right now?
I think the Heat win the next two games at home, which would make it 3-1. I think Denver then would win the next game. But then I think Miami closes it out in 6.
Wow. Bold prediction, and I'm all here for it. I do think I'm going to stick with my prediction. I think Denver wins in 6, but that game two has definitely shifted the momentum here. I'm excited to see what happens tomorrow when this game plays out here. But I do like that you've been on the Heat and you're not going to, you know, get knocked off your spot there. And I can't blame you. Like I said, they're like the fireworks show that never ends.
Denver's been a really solid team all playoffs, great team, but they're lacking the experience. So unless they can somehow, if they come out and answer next game and they win the next game, then I think it swings back to them. But if they lose this next game, I honestly think it's over. So,
well, I can't argue with you on that. So we'll have a podcast episode after that game as well here too. So thank you for you listeners for coming on here, clicking in and enjoying. I hope you're enjoying at least what you're listening to here. Pat made his debut today. Really excited to have him going forward here. And it'll also help me with my vocal cords as well too. So appreciate you coming on here. But we'll post some content to the YouTube and to the Instagram pages as well. Right now, we're working on getting a website created so we can go on Apple and Spotify too. So exciting things coming down the road here. As always, just message either of us on Instagram or Facebook and just let us know if you have any topics or questions you want us to answer as well too. But this is Protect the Paint, episode 2. You guys have a great day.
Peace.
Cool, man.